Awesome.
Folks, here's what's happening, okay? This is turning into a real show. I'm going to try some segments today. We're going to see what sticks and what doesn't. I'm going to challenge myself with AI. I'm going to riff on credentialing and what a waste of time and resources that is. And then I even have some shows lined up that I'm excited to talk to you about. And so I wanted to spend a few minutes on the show today to share that with you guys, because this extends my season tremendously and makes me smile because what I'm doing is working. So thanks for listening to the show. My name is Joe Clossy, and I'm the host of the Traveling Principal podcast, a show designed to remedy your cold like an all-natural elixir made from ginger, honey, turmeric, lemon, and some cayenne powder to hammer that point home. As you can tell, I've been drinking them. So, while atmospheric rivers are at play in the world again, let's dive right in. I have some cool news to share with you to start. I always come on the show and literally bash testing, especially standardized testing, because it assumes that a one-size-fits-all model is at play when it really isn't. But that's not what today's show is about. Today's show is about a different kind of assessment, the one that ends with credentialing. So this assessment is by far and away the most useless of all possible assessments that exist. Okay, that might be a massive exaggeration, but it's absolutely the biggest waste of time. There's no exaggeration there. Here's several reasons why. One, I've never heard a teacher say, "Thank goodness I went to this teacher training program. I'm such a better teacher now because of it." What does that tell me? Plain and simple, it sucks. Right? If nobody's ever given it praise, the writing's on the wall. Two, the amount of effort that goes into planning some of these lessons is commonly followed with, "Don't worry, you'll never have to put this much stuff in your lesson plans again after this credential program is over." Quick follow-up then, why do it in the first place? What on earth is this purpose? Okay, three, a commonly heard administrative statement is, "You know, if you can make it through these first few years of going through that program while learning to be a teacher, you'll last a lifetime in this career. It'll never get any harder than this." Oh, okay. So a few things right off the bat. If we know that the first few years are the hardest, why front load that with this massive waste of additional effort and time? Also, should the teacher program be the first few years of teaching? No school even accepts the crap that they teach you in those programs as the norm. Practices are outdated. No teacher actually walks away with knowing what a plan looks like at their new site, because it's guaranteed to be different from what they're being taught to do. Also, the amount of work is so out of the scope and sequence of normal teaching and pedagogy, so much different from regular and daily planning. And it's usually because the people who call the shots regarding what's being taught were teachers like 20 years ago. Oh my gosh. Number four, these programs are usually so big, no one ever knows what to do, except that one person who's been doing it for years and no one can ever get a hold of. They have like an answering machine at their house. Come on. Number five, the policies that guide these programs are always vague at best. They were created before 10,000 new stipulations and regulations and rules were put in place. Everything that we're into was pre-pandemic. I mean, come on. Six, it's all a money-making scheme. If you've ever thought, "Oh, we're going to make our own and certify our own teachers in this district," you're going up against a monster that is your county office of education. So don't bother. This is a money-making scheme. It certainly doesn't prepare teachers. It's costly, super, super time-consuming. And at the end of the day, the assessments are the worst part. I mean, The teacher assessments are so subjective at best that even if you take it and feel like you did a great job, chances are your score is average if you pass at all. Why we still do it this way, knowing that we have a giant teacher shortage, you guys, is just beyond me. You want to fix the teacher shortage, like ASAP? Drop your credential crap and figure out how to support these people. Give them a few years to figure it out and improve. If they do, they're credentialed. Simple. Let the school handle PD. Let the school handle planning. And all pedagogical topics, for that matter, that teachers should be exposed to. Why should it be anyone else's task? Oh my goodness. So before my shirt literally burns off my body because I am on fire with rage right now, let's shift gears to something else. I built a chatbot. Now, it sounds a lot harder than it was. I YouTubed it, paid for it, of course, and created rules for it to follow. I made a bot called Teach and Lead Pro. It can do all of the following for teachers. Lesson plan only using the workshop model outline. It cites sources, follows the Common Core standards, and is as intuitive as lesson planning has been. It's also front-loaded with Rika, EdTPA, and CalTPA information for credentialing. So if someone wants to vet what they did, needs examples for ideas for videos and observations, or wants to make sure that they are on the right path, this is for them. It's a virtual tutor in this regard for stupid credentialing. It was also front-loaded with ideas for classroom management, special education, varying instructions, differentiation, and all things legally connected to daily teaching and learning. Not bad. How is that different? Well, you do not have to prompt it to get the type of lesson plan that is student-centered, contemporary, fits with project-based learning, or is usually commonly found in schools today. Right? So I thought that was a good way to do it. The fact that it also is forced to cite its sources means that it's not going to make stuff up. Now, it can also do the following for administrators. It can help with difficult conversations, as it was front-loaded with programming of the likes of Brené Brown, and can help with responses to current situations on the fly using her type of style and strategy. It can read PDFs for scheduling. It can assist with legal issues, as sources for this area are only .gov sites. And for administrators looking to help with evaluations, the California Teaching Professional Standards are what it uses to guide what it reads. Oh, it's like a virtual evaluator. Kind of cool, sounds cool, and that's because it is. If this is something I had back in the day, I mean, I would have been stoked. Holy crap. Like the amount of hours we spend trying to think of ideas, samples. You can put in, give me a subpar, a par, and an advanced example of a response to a document-based question for like a state assessment, and bam, there it is. You don't have to think of them. You don't have to search the web and look for them. It will write them for you. If you want to try this out with me, hit me up, joe@travelprincipal.com, and let's try it. I need more people to vet it with, so I can fine-tune it as we go. I was almost going to say as it grows. I guess as it enhances and progresses. In fact, let's like try it out right now. Let's do this. Bear with me for a second. I have a prompt here, and I'm going to put in the I'm going to read it to you, and then I'm going to copy and paste it in. It says, I need a lesson plan for a fourth grade class. It fuses literacy into math. At a level that is a little below the average for this grade, and make the lesson hands-on. So, our Teach and Lead Pro, without further ado, let's put it in there, and certainly for the fourth grade class that integrates literacy into math while being hands-on, tailored to students slightly below the grade level, I suggest the following. Lesson plan title, Measuring and Storytelling. It is a one-hour lesson focusing on math and literacy, applying basic measurement skills in a practical context, improving comprehension and problem-solving skills through reading and interpreting word problems, and attempts to enhance collaborative skills through group activities. So definitely hands-on, definitely project-based. There's a beginning starter activity with a quick interactive game called Estimate and Measure, where students estimate various lengths of classroom objects. There's a focus question of how can we use measurements to solve real-world problems. I love it. And then a mini lesson, 10 minutes, introduce measurements, discuss these key terms, so we have some direct instruction. If I wanted, I could go in and say, give me examples for the handouts for the mini lesson and direct instruction, and it will. There's a class application activity after the mini lesson for 20 minutes with a word problem challenge. Also, storytelling with measurements after solving each pair of word problems that students create. They are to use a storyboard template to create a short story that incorporates their measurement problem and solution, encouraging creativity for this process. Then we have a whole class share out and concluding with an exit strategy, which is distribute a worksheet with measurement and word problems for individual practice as homework. They will reinforce the day's learning and provide additional practice. Wow. It gives us an idea of how it's differentiated. It tells us what we did in the form of formative and summative assessments throughout this plan, and gives you a summary as to the purpose. It is incredible. I like that. Here's another prompt. Again, this is one that I had gotten not long ago. It says, I am a high school principal and I have to speak to a teacher about their inappropriate conversation that they have had with a student, frame an outline of what I should say so the conclusion is positive and I get my point across clearly. So I am going to go back to the old Teach and Lead Pro, copy and paste that sucker in there. Certainly, I have a sense of, oh, I did program, make sure you have a humorous tone similar to the likes of Will Ferrell and Jim Carrey. So I did say that. I guess I did that for examples. So beware of that. That is my own unique touch. I don't see it a lot, but in the responses. So for example, conversation outline for addressing inappropriate, documented conversation with a teacher, introduction and setting the tone. Start by expressing appreciation for the teacher's contributions to the school. State the purpose of the meeting in a clear, non-confrontational manner. Reiterate the importance of a respectful and professional school environment in school. You know what? Before I go any further, I'm going to copy that second one. State the purpose of the meeting in a clear, non-confrontational example and type in, give me an example of how I can say this part. Put it in quotes. Paste it in. Enter. Let me see what it said. Certainly. Thank you for meeting with me today. I wanted to take the opportunity to discuss a matter that's been brought to my attention. It's regarding a conversation that reportedly occurred between you and a student. I believe it's important for us to talk about this to ensure we're aligned with our school's values and policies on teacher-student interactions. My aim is to understand the situation better and work together to address any concerns. I want to assure you that this meeting is a space for open and respectful dialogue. Hey now, I'm feeling good about that. It documents several points here. Addressing the issue. Point 3, listening to the teacher's perspective. Point 4, discussing the impact. Point 5, joint problem solving. Point 6, constructive feedback and encouragement. 7, conclusion and next steps. 8, documentation. Wow. So there's no accusatory point finger, this is you. It says in here, addressing the issue, avoid accusations, use I statements to express your concern. For example, I am concerned about a conversation that was reported to have occurred between you and a student recently. Emphasize school policies and the expectations for professional boundaries. So there's like it breaks down into different sections, what you are to do, how you are to do it in order to obtain those results. And I like that. I like that a lot. I think that that's something that could, I would have used often as a principal and could work on a daily basis, regardless if you are a principal or if you are a teacher. There were an example from each. But Now I want to do something a little different. I want to challenge my bot with some questions. I'm going to pull up a few questions that I had some fans send me. Okay, they're clients, but on the show I have to call them fans and they know who they are, so thanks you guys. And I'm going to see if my answer, after I drop it in the chat bot titled Teach and Lead Pro, if I am right, and see if the bot matches what I say, so we can kind of check out the accuracy here. So let's try this. I'm going to ask it, what are some true or false statements about education in America today? The first statement that I have is, the United States has one of the highest high school graduation rates in the world. I mean, I know that's false. So that's an easy one to start. Let's see what I put in here. The United States has one of the highest graduation rates. False. As of the latest data, the United States has a high school graduation rate that is relatively high, but not among the highest in the world. Several countries have higher rates, according to the International Education Reports. Cool. I like that one. Here's another one. The United States spends more per student on education than most other countries. Before I drop this one in, I'm going to say that this is true. Okay? And I'm going to drop it in there. Excuse me. True, it is. The United States is among the top countries in terms of per student spending on education, though this does not always correlate directly with higher student performance on international assessments. I know that PISA assessment result for this past year, US is not in the top, so that's kind of how I knew the one to the last one, but it's funny that they resort back to PISA for this second school, or second question, sorry. Okay, here's another question. Ooh, here we go. All states in the U.S. have adopted the Common Core state standards. I mean, I feel like they have to. The Common Core state standards were developed with all states in mind. I'm sure federal dollars is tied to it, unless a state has their own variation. Oh, man. Now I'm thinking of Florida. My immediate response is true, but the more I think about it, I wonder how false that can be. So let's put it in. The United States have adopted, all states have adopted the Common Core state standards. False. While many states initially adopted the Common Core state standards, several states have since revised. Which states did not adopt the Common Core? Which states? Which ones? As of April 2023, this is the 4.0 version, right? So I pay for this one. Most states in the U.S. initially adopted the Common Core state standards, which were launched in 2010. However, over time, several states decided not to adopt them and later moved away. They are Texas, Virginia, Nebraska, Alaska, Indiana, Oklahoma, South Carolina. Wow. Really? So Texas, Virginia, Nebraska, Alaska. Virginia, I'm a little surprised about. With each, it actually says what standards they do use. So Texas has Texas Essential Knowledge Skills, TEKS. Virginia seems to have Standards of Learning, which is SOL. Nebraska State Accountability, SESA. Alaska did not adapt to the Common Core state standards, although the state's standards are similar in many respects. That's an interesting one. Some states initially adopted it, but then later repealed, and those are Indiana, Oklahoma, and South Carolina. It says here that South Carolina phased out the standards, replacing them with South Carolina College and Career Ready standards. Good for you guys. All right. Okay. So that's a new one. I'm stoked on that one, and I was definitely wrong, because my immediate response was that we all had to adopt them. Let's see. Let's do one more. So, teachers' salaries in the U.S. are consistent across all states. So I can definitely tell you false, right? Because I remember talking to a teacher from Missouri not long ago, as well as a teacher from Georgia, and I can guarantee you that what they were making was not anywhere near what is being made in the state of California, in the state of New York, in the state of Hawaii, in the state of Texas. I'm not too sure what they're making there. And so I'm going to say false. Let's put it in. Teacher salaries in the United States vary widely by state and even by district within states, often reflecting the cost of living in the state or local education budgets. Yeah, I figured as much, right? So that was an easy one. But nonetheless, we were 100 on the day. I think that's pretty cool. I like it. I made it for you guys, for teachers or for administrators. If you want me to use it with you, I'd be happy to. So I do have some good news. I want to segue to that. Coming up in recent episodes, I had someone email me and ask for clarification when using, when trying to fuse executive functions into their teaching practice. And I reached out to Mitch Weathers, owner of Organized Binder, and he is stoked to come on the show and chat about it. So I went directly to the source, and I'll bring him on and we'll interview Mitch. I interviewed two educators not long ago regarding some cool things that they are working on at their school sites. And I wanted to invite you or anyone listening to a future challenge that looks like it's going to be a paper airplane competition that I think is international at this point. It's like a North American challenge, Canada and America. So something to keep an eye on. It includes virtual online collaboration with schools and classes and a competition that is videoed and put on YouTube. Big things. Last season, I went to Georgia for the Mindset Safety Training Conference. And although I couldn't make this year's event, I will do the next best thing and bring one of the main guys from the program on the show. And we can ask him some questions to see why what they do works for kids. Mindset Safety Training revolves around passive, nonviolent approaches to working with students to identify their current state, to head off a crisis, to intervene pre anything boiling over into something. The best way I can say it is it's as proactive instead of reactive as we get in education. And so for the finale, I'm going to Hawaii to film on location a few schools in Oahu where I'll be checking out and seeing what works and then trying to help out anywhere that I can, if that's even possible. I am so excited for that part. There could be a couple of different sites that I'm going to go around on Oahu, and yeah, so that is actually happening towards the end of March, and I absolutely cannot wait, folks. My name is Joe Clossy, and I'm stoked for some of these up and coming shows, as you can tell. Thanks for listening to me riff and share what I have going on to help you guys. And remember, if you have someone at your site that is going through one of these programs and they look like they haven't slept in a month, it's because the system still thinks it's ironing out the strongest that make it through this credential process. And that is really antithetical to its plight more than anything. Next time, let my bot help you.